But I know there's a formula that I need to be having this many live conversations for things to be dropping through my sales funnel. But the most critical part of my sales funnel is when things are dropping through, am I filling them back up?
Hey everyone, I'm Katie Traxton and welcome to Anatomy of an Agency, the podcast that brings you everything you need to know about the role of a talent agent working in sport and entertainment. You might be new to the industry, you might be a veteran, or maybe you're just curious. You are all welcome to join us and our guests as we dig into the minutiae of a complicated world. Harry Kane is one of the biggest footballers in the world at the moment, and this week we are joined by the man who, for the past few years, has been running his commercial dealings, Josh Stevens. Josh now has his own business after working for Harry, Leighton Orient Football Club, and the concert venue owner and promoter AEG. He gives us some brilliant insight into how commercial partnerships for global sports stars are created, and started by telling us all the ways he has engaged with agents in the past, beginning with his time at AEG.
I had some incredible dealings with agents of artists in that arena, and it was amazing. You had some really cool people from, you know, the rock and roll ages through to some of the more current artists, and you can see how the industry has evolved and changed during that period of time, and some who, you know, cracked the whip from the days that were yonder. And I look at that time and some agency dealing very fondly. And I guess more recently, in my prior role, when I was at Leighton Orient, we did an amazing deal with a YouTube group called The Sidemen, did a bit of work with those guys. And yeah, again, to see a different type of agency from, you know, the music industry and the sports world to, you know, the influencer arena, it was really interesting to see how they operate. But ultimately, everybody operates in the same way. How can they service their client in the best way? How can they reduce time, maximize revenue? But yeah, there's a few little scatterings there.
Do you actually believe that? Do you actually believe that all agents operated in the best possible way, helping their clients, and none were a hindrance?
No. No, look, I think maybe it's me being foolish, but, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, 9 times out of 10 people are there genuinely trying to act in the correct way for their client, and I'm sure that's the case most of the time, but yeah, there's certainly the people that I've had dealings with, it was always client first, and that's what I really respected, because that's exactly how I've kind of operated, what's the best thing for my client, and roll out from there.
So speaking of your client, your most recent client was Harry Kane. What's really interesting is he has a very different structure to someone who just signs to an agency, because he's kind of built his own structure. You were responsible for his commercial deals. How do you and the rest of the team work alongside an agent? Like, what is that jigsaw puzzle?
Yeah, so I think it was one thing the family wanted to do was build an agency that served Harry. So we I think, I guess that's why it fitted so well to me. It was always client first. So what was right for Harry was right for the agency, and I think having that structure really meant that we drove towards a set of KPIs that were relevant and that Harry wanted to adhere to. I think sometimes when you look at a multiplayer agency, you know, are you the biggest name in that agency? If the answer is yes, are you getting more service time? Probably yes. If you're someone that's young and coming through the ranks, are you always getting the right brands for you? Probably not. It's about getting your brand deals to get you on that pathway and that journey. So yeah, I think I think when you look at the smaller talent agencies, 1 to 5, maybe even 10 talents, you can really start to own who they are, what they want to be, and help them drive that career. Whereas I think bigger than that, you lose that kind of family touch for me.
Yeah, it must be. I mean, all of you working on kind of one person as the central talent must be massively like creating a family structure. But the interesting part, I think, is usually the agent would be doing the commercial deals. But in this instance, you're not an agent, but you were doing the commercial deals.
Yeah.
So how does that work?
So yeah, I reported into Harry's agent as such.
Like this idea. The agent is the master and commander of.
Yeah, he ran the agency, I guess. So yeah, look, it's what they tried to build and have built is an agency that serves one, but has all the right skill sets within it to maximise. So, you know, I think is an individual always the best person to do the commercial deals, the social media stuff, and other aspects of what's important within an agency? Probably not. Therefore, bringing the talent in to support that.
And can you talk us through, right, I'm going to put you on the spot here, how does a deal work from start to finish? Because I think one of the great misnomers of the industry is that you're representing even someone as well known as Harry Kane, and everybody calls you up and says, do you want to do a deal tomorrow? Here's the deal. And you go, oh, I don't know how I feel about that. Bit more. They go, okay, it's done. Can you tell us the reality of how these things work?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've always said it, whether you're selling a premium seating seat at the O2 Arena through to Harry Kane or Leighton Orient or what I'm doing now, I genuinely believe the sales process is exactly the same. It just has a different set of zeros on the end depending on the scale of the opportunity. I think for me, I've always tried to be more proactive than reactive. It's always been about getting the right, speaking to the right brands. So 9 times out of 10, the deals that I would typically construct were me actually reaching out rather than inbound stuff. But yeah, you know, when the great inbound stuff did come, for me, it was, taking that back, you know, breaking it down into what's the actual ask, building out the value proposition, you know, and that wasn't always necessarily, is it paying our market rate? It could be, is it also delivering into a set of eyeballs that typically we wouldn't necessarily reach into but are interested to move into? Can they unlock other collaborations with other talent that again could open up new opportunities? And then for me, it was always running up the flagpole, making sure that everybody was aligned, and making sure that that we'd looked at it collectively and made sure that the structure that we're putting together was the right thing. And then, yeah, going down to the basics of having that conversation with a brand. I mean, again, for me, I've always been black and white. If I wanted X, that was it. I wasn't going to go, I want Y with a view of coming down to X. I want X, that's it. I'm not into all this. Come on, I'll scratch yours, you scratch mine. This is what we want. I think transparency is key, and it cuts a lot of the bullshit out.
So between X and Y, which is presumably the deal terms, what is best for your client? Is it just money or is it more than that?
No, I think, I look at what I'm doing today with some of the companies that I'm doing work with. Yes, of course, financially, there is an element that the cash is important. But when you're trying to grow a brand, it's also about, are they the right brand? How can they actually elevate the brand that I'm working? You know, I'm one of the amazing clients I've got at the moment is in the world of Paddle. They're a young startup, but they're absolutely slaying it. They're doing amazing stuff. And we've got some amazing brand partnerships coming on board. And some of them, you know, were virtually, you know, taking 50% of what we would typically want, but because they're the right brand to be to aligning with, big UK brands that we know can elevate our proposition. So no, for me, the cash was always something you looked at. And I think if I'm being totally transparent, that was the first thing I would look at, because if it was too low, you know, sometimes those conversations weren't worthwhile having. But the cash for me was never the be all and end all. The best thing about deals that are for me is that you look at are, you know, the way that they collaborate together. You look at the front of shirt deal with Leighton Orient. That, whilst it was a great club deal, it was at the beginning of a pandemic. We sold four times as many shirts as the club has ever sold. And all of a sudden, clubs in the US, people in New Zealand were talking about Leighton Orient Football Club off the back of doing that front of shirt deal with Harry. So yes, cash is important, but actually in the grand scheme of things, it's about what brings partnerships together and how you can add additional value to that mechanism.
So this is a brilliant example to come back to your point about being proactive. So you were referring to, I think it was absolutely genius. We're going to give you this, Josh. I think it was genius. I was obsessed with it. It's the only reason we're even in touch is because I actually wrote to you to tell you I thought it was genius. This Harry Kane, Leighton Orient kind of partnership, coming back to his roots and elevating a club that is well loved locally, but maybe not known on a kind of international stage. I think it would be fair to say that despite your claims that everybody has people's best interests at heart, not everybody is proactive in their style of doing commercial deals. Yep. And that to an extent is what has enabled your success. What made you want to be proactive? Like, what made you want to do things differently? And how can other people do that?
Yeah, I think I thought about this actually last night about...
We didn't send him any questions.
No, you didn't. You're absolutely correct. But in terms of, I think I'll give credit to probably two or three people throughout my career.
Oh, you're too kind, Josh.
Well, one being yourself, of course. I think my father, my dad's worked in a similar industry to me throughout his career. I've always looked up to him, and every Saturday night as a young kid, me and my dad would watch Match of the Day, and we'd talk about how we can create a new business or something like that. So I think that kind of creativity and that kind of entrepreneurship kind of mindset was probably built through him. I was very fortunate to work with AEG, who I personally think are the best partnerships team on the planet in terms of not only doing deals, but delivering deals. And we used to, regularly walk the floors in arenas and look at dead spaces and think, how can we monetize this? How can we create something here? You look at, I think it's called the 93rd Suite, sponsored by Qatar Airlines, but they've just built a retractable platform that goes out over the crowd. It's super cool. It's different, and that's, in this busy day, age that we live in.
Oh, you have to cut through the noise.
You have to cut through the noise. You know, that's why, and I'd equally speak highly of Leighton Orient and the board there. They were all about being different, challenging the norm. And I remember writing a paper on this dead space at the stadium where St. John's Ambulance would wheel their
a trolley,
let's just call it a trolley. Gosh. So they'd place this trolley right in the corner of the pitch. Perfect location. And I just thought, you've got the best space in the ground. This is not right. So we came up with a wacky idea of purchasing a dugout and taking that dog out to market and trying to find a sponsor for it and creating a premium kind of group offering. And I think the first day we launched, I got called every name under the sun by fans in the crowd, monetizing our club. We'd done a brand deal with Papa John's, who at halftime arrived at the stadium, hooted their horn, delivered pizzas to the guests in the third dugout. By week two, we'd sold out the season. The fans loved it. But again, the board were always going to think of something different, you know, off the back of Harry, Papa John's, the media marketing team launched the Ultimate FIFA Quarantine Tournament, which was one of the biggest tournaments during the pandemic of e-gaming, all launched by a little club from East London who were punching well above their weight. So yeah, I'd say they're the kind of three key instigators to why I believe challenging the norm, being different. You know, once you've got a client, keep a client, because it's far easier to retain a client than go and find a new client. And just be a decent bloody human being.
Yeah, that's important. I want to come back to your point about resilience, because while you were a much more progressive child than me coming up with business plans from Match of the Day, I was asking my dad why Ferraris were red in Formula One. But to the young people out there who are thinking, oh, I'm an aspiring talent or I'm an aspiring agent and I need to do my first deal. Like, I need money in order to be able to train, to practice or to put myself on the map. How do you have the resilience to what I'm going to class as the inevitable no's, and not just the no's, but as you said, sometimes like people being openly scornful about your ideas?
Yeah. Yeah, look, I would say I've just gone through that period myself again. So I set up my own business four or five months ago. And one of the things that I've loved about it most is the hustle. And I think, you know, that is the most critical part of setting something up or being young and dynamic in your sector is embracing the hustle, because it's a hustle. And you know, I think once you do get past the hustle and bustle, but that first period is about creating opportunity. And I've lived and breathed by my sales funnel that I've used throughout my entire career. And I know that, you know, and I have to adapt the funnel slightly depending on, you know, if I was selling Harry Kane versus what I'm currently doing. I didn't need to have as many conversations in my funnel with Harry Kane than I do with what I'm doing now. But I know there's a formula that I need to be having this many live conversations for things to be dropping through my sales funnel. But the most critical part of my sales funnel is when things are dropping through, am I filling them back up? Because then there's the cycle of stuff coming through. So yeah, I know for my current business that I'm running that I need to have 55 live conversations going on, that I'm adamant that if I have that going on consistently, not only will I be creating opportunity at the bottom of my funnel, but I'll be restocking it with some great opportunities at the top. So embrace the hustle. You are going to get no's. I think the biggest infuriation for me is the lack of response. Like, when do we become so lazy as a society?
Online dating. It's just ghosting, gone crazy in the business world.
I'm so lucky that I met my wife before the world of online dating. So I'm very fortunate, touch wood, so she still loves me and won't leave me. But I haven't had to go through that period. But it infuriates me with the lack of response. I threw out a Hail Mary to one of the biggest brands on the planet. And guess what? Every single time I speak to her or send her something, she always responds. And I respect that. out of hell, and she'll go, nice try, not for us this time, but keep sending us opportunities. I think, you know, whether people blame the pandemic, but it just seems like they've just lost a little bit of a human element of people are just trying to make a living. If it's not for you, just no thanks. Thanks.
Well, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because actually it feels easy just to ignore someone, but actually you need to acquire those skills of being able to say no or explain your reasoning, and that makes all of us better. Yeah. But okay, one mini question. Yes. You said 55 leads going into your funnel. What's that then conversion rate? Just for the avid listener who's going to be following the Josh Stevens model.
Yeah.
What's that conversion rate? How many will be popping out the other end of the funnel if you've got 55 going in?
Yeah, look, I think it varies on a month-by-month basis and what I'm looking for. But in terms of, you know, some months I'll be focused on finding a new client for me. So if I'm having, I probably need slightly less conversations for that, but I'll be creating two or three out of the bottom of the pipeline. The 55 comes in when I'm trying to find brand partnership deals for some of the talent I'm working with or some of the rights holders. If I'm having that many live conversations, I know per month I'm going to be creating two or three opportunities a month, and that works really well for my clients at the moment.
So when you're doing brand partnerships, and is it when you've got your two or three strong leads that you bring talent in to discuss them? Is it once you've got a firm deal on the table? Or are you discussing even who you're going to go out to right at the beginning of the process?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, it's always been about understanding my proposition first. So, you know, if I look at it right now, I know that I've got some talent, but I've also got rights holders, so I'm not going out to brands on a scattergraph approach. It's about aligning those conversations with the right talent. I think once we've had a purposeful conversation, that's when I would typically take that opportunity to talent or rights holder and say, here's a conversation that we've been having. Is it something that we want to progress? These are the reasons why we're having it, because of alignment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, you know, with all my clients, they know that I know what they're looking for. So I'm only going to bring them the right types of opportunity. And two, that, you know, I'm going to bring them in at the right time. I'm not going to waste their time early doors. So yeah, I think it varies though. Equally, you know, the panel company that I'm doing some work with, they're like, Josh, we have full faith in you. Go on, go and drive the world of paddle. Whereas, you know, some of the others want to, you know, be taken on that journey with them. So again, adapt and make sure you're doing the right thing by your client. And if they want to be part of that journey, if they want to be part of that conversation earlier, then that's exactly what they're going to be. So yeah, I don't think there's ever a this is the right way to do it. The right way to do it is built up over time and working with a client for a period of time and understanding what their needs and requirements are.
You speak about the hustle of working in and with younger businesses, but with that comes agility. One of the things that I would love to know about is when you're working with someone as established as Harry, it feels to me like the walls close in a little bit because, one, you're probably in an area where you've got sector exclusivity, so you can't do more than one deal in one area.
Yeah.
Secondly, you will have incoming traffic. You'll also have established deals. How do you maintain that creativity and proactivity in that environment and not just become, you know, a booking agent who's good at making sure the final deal on the piece of paper is worth it?
Worth it. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you're right. I think your ocean of opportunity becomes smaller. But then for me, it was about, you know, understanding your talent's profile, what their current partner portfolio looks like, and getting a better behavioral understanding of your client so that you can start to look at, okay, there's categories here that we're not touching, we can touch because there's a level of authenticity. But equally, you know, your talent might not necessarily be looking at new commercial opportunities, or certainly commercial partnerships. It might be, I want to look at equity opportunities, or I want to look at creating documentaries, or I want to become an author. So, you know, for me, you know, whilst I was a head of partnerships, I always looked beyond partnerships because there's a big bad world out there that we can explore. During our time with Harry, we did some amazing kind of brand equity deals with some really cool up and coming young brands, from Our Pure Planet, a headphone company, through to the latest one that the Harry Kane company announced in the Three Bears, which is a German porridge brand that are taking over Germany and now looking to come over to the UK and take over the UK using Harry as their vehicle. But yeah, you know, I think there's always opportunity to find and open up new doorways. It just might not be the traditional doorway that your original hat was fit for. So I think being agile, adaptable is vital to creating a successful agency or business.
From Porridge O'Clock to Papa John's time, I do my best to be agile and adaptable every day. Now it is time for our favourite feature, Legal Corner. So pull up a pizza and listen to the advice from Hugh James. After our conversation with Josh and his work with Harry Kane, we were wondering, how does a celebrity protect their image rights?
What are image rights? It's the right to use your name, your likeness, and if you've got a logo, then effectively your logo as well. So it's a company set up to control and commercialize your image rights. What are the main pros and cons? So pros would be that it's very tax efficient, potentially, rather than owning the rights in your own name and exploiting them in your own name. And secondly, that a company, if it's set up as a limited liability company, then your liability, as the name suggests, your liability is limited when you're doing deals. Cons of setting one up are effectively that it's admin hassle, it's got extra costs, and there's some complexity involved. It's not quite as simple as being a sole trader. And also there's some implementation risk. If you don't do it properly and follow HMRC's rules and the tax rules, then you will come a cropper and they will send you an extra tax bill. So you've got to be careful how you do that. There's lots of implementation risk in all of this. I mean, I've seen situations where people have made boyfriends, girlfriends, wives, husbands, directors and shareholders of their image rights company. There's no shareholders agreement. The articles of association of the company haven't been tailored to suit their circumstances. All sorts of stuff that really shouldn't be happening. So if you're going to set up an image rights company, it's really important that your accountant's involved, and it's really important that you take independent legal advice on how you set it up and then how you implement it properly. Because if you don't implement it properly, you're just giving HMRC the excuse they need to come looking for you for tax.
Yeah, so you don't just prioritise immediate tax relief over everything else.
No, it's got to be implemented correctly on a day-to-day basis. Your invoices have got to go out with the correct details on them. If you're registered for VAT, you've got to make sure you're putting the correct information on your invoices. It's all got to be done properly. Otherwise, it's just so easy for it all to be undermined.
Thanks so much to Mark Loosemore and to Hugh James for that insight. Please do get in touch with us at Good Vibes Only Talent on social media or by email at gvo@goodvibesonlytalent.com. And for now, from me, it is goodbye.